Hey. So we're back on Deep Space Nine after doing the siege of AR-558 last time.
Loved it, didn't you?
Well, not really, but I decided that we would do another Deep Space Nine episode as a kind of palate cleanser, and it turns out the second scheme...
You did this once before, do you remember?
No.
What did you do? Was it TNG? Yeah, we had a really terrible episode of TNG, which we were both excited about, and we hated it, and you were like, oh, can we do another one? Just to remind myself why I like this show.
That's good. And this is great. I mean, this is so Deep Space 90 and so good, just terrifically good. I enjoyed the hell out of this one.
Do you know what I loved about this watching it was the fact that it pretty much addressed every criticism that you usually have of 90s Trek. You know, it's set in one room with just a few actors. You know, there's very little visual interest.
Yeah.
But it did play to a lot of DS9's strengths as well. The sort of labyrinthine plotting, the fantastic acting. When they get the dialogue right, like they do here, it's really, really sayable dialogue, especially stuff that Garak's saying. More on that later. But this is a really interesting time for DS9 because... we've had series one, and that was, you know, mixed response. We went in, this is going to be the next best thing. You know, TNG was such a success. DS9 is going to be amazing. And then everyone watched series one and went, whoa, what the hell was that? so it's like some gold in there, but a lot of rough, you know? And then series two, I think, upped the ante quite a lot. And they did some experiments. They did the first three-parter. They did the Marquee two-parter. So they started doing this sort of cross-series plotting. And the run from the end of, I think, from sort of crossover to the end of series two is a really strong run where people started saying, okay, this thing's starting to gather momentum. Then they bring in the Dominion at the end of series two. And then they go all out with that at the beginning of series three with the Search. They bring in the Defiant.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so this is something that's not being wrapped up, you know, from the end of the last season to the beginning of this, we're actually going to keep going. And even in like House of Quark, which we watched before, you've got a subplot where Keiko's saying things like, well, it seems like everyone's got the Dominion on their mind these days.
Yeah.
And boy, do we. But we are still doing a lot of standalone episodes in with the occasional arc episode where I know that sort of turns a corner sort of from series four onwards. And so we're in hit and miss territory with the standalones now. So you'll either have a complete turkey like Fascinations where Luxana Troi comes on board the station and brings virus with her.
Yeah.
Or the one where... oh, actually, I quite like this one, but some people consider it a turkey, where Kira becomes a massive crystal.
Do you remember that one? Stone. Yes.
I love that one.
It's so weird.
Or you have stuff that's absolutely amazingly good, like Past Tense, like Through the Looking Glass, which is a great alternative universe episode, and things like The Adversary, which does the thing on the Defiant. Yeah, and I think Second Skin is a particularly good early season three standalone episode.
So when it came up last time, there were the obvious comparisons with Face of the Enemy, which also has like a leading female character waking up looking like she's from some other species. And I really like Face of the Enemy because it gives Marina something to do and she's really fabulous in it. She's so much more cool than she is
normally. It's Marina and Carolyn Seymour together in high camp is amazing.
Yeah. So, but that, you know, like that isn't as interesting as this. I think that this is vastly more interesting and I think it's partly because Kira has a backstory, you know, there's stuff to say about her and it kind of plays on the backstory and it does the thing that other Deep Space Nines were doing right from series one, which is putting an our visitor in a room with someone else who is a good actor and just explore that central relationship. And we have it in Duet, we have it in Progress, and we have it here with Ileana's father, and it's really good. It works really well. Both of them are really kind of likable and interesting. And the twist in the episode I didn't see coming. I've seen this before, but I didn't remember it. And it's a proper twist. It's good.
It's really good, isn't it? Well, I like the fact that you are being hoodwinked from the pre-title sequence, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're making you look at Kira.
Yeah.
All the way through, because that's the big sort of concept here, is Kira is a Cardassian. So all the way through, you're like, well, they're trying to get information out of her.
Yeah,
Gamora's just a really good actor, you know, and he's playing on her sympathies. And then when that twist drops at the end, and you're like, oh, fuck it. I've been looking in the wrong direction the whole time.
But it's not just a misdirection, because it's Deep Space Nine and we assume that our regulars are the focus of whatever's going on. And so it's absolutely reasonable to assume that they're just mind-fucking with Kira in order to get information out of her. Although the information they try and get out of her is dumb. I mean, they could just sort of wander on the station.
Oh, man. Like, where she goes, what is it?
Take a look around.
The Federation runs the station. I wasn't even allowed into ARPS. How many troops did they have? 20, 30,000? Don't tell them I told you, okay? I love that.
But they had someone on the station already who must have been able to know that. So that, like, that doesn't convince. But the twist that it's actually a mindfuck of Gamora is so clever and so unexpected. I just thought it worked really well.
Well, and by that point as well, we've gotten to know him and we like him.
Yeah.
And they liked this relationship so much that he comes back in series 5 for a very sort of intimate character study with him and Kira. Where it's the end of his life and he wants to deliver his military secrets to her or his intelligence secrets before he goes. But this works twofold, doesn't it? It works as a brilliant character study of Kira, and we've done so much groundwork already. Like, you and I have talked about what's established in series 1, where, first of all, she kind of confronts the fact that she's on the other side of the line now, that she's in the same position as the Cardassians during.
Yeah.
And then in Duet, we establish, you know, she has that terrible reaction to that Cardassian war criminal. And at the end of that, she comes to the conclusion, actually, they're not all bad.
Yeah.
But it is definitely established that, you know, for good reason, she is incredibly racist about Cardassian.
Yeah.
With good reason. So the worst nightmare for her is to wake up with a Cardassian face.
And that
plays out brilliant here. So it's a great study of Kira. And again, she reaches that conclusion at the end of this, that not all Cardassians are terrible. This is a good man. She's going to help him out. But then it also establishes the Obsidian Order and the Central Command in series 3 of DS9. And then at the end of series 3, in a couple of episodes time, we go to an episode called Defiant, where there's a ton of scenes with Dukat and Sisko as they're going after Tom Riker. And that's all set within Central Command. He works for Central Command. And the Obsidian Order is keeping a big secret in the Madeline cluster or whatever it is. And it turns out that they're building up this vast army of ships to go and attack the Dominion planet. And that plays out at the end. And so there's this whole sort of, suddenly the show's working on a big scale. And it's setting up lots of different things on these planets that pay off later.
So the previous episode, we'll get going in a sec, but I just want to ask, the previous episode, The Wire, which is a kind of Garak thing, there's something in his head that malfunctions and causes him to release great wadges of tortured backstory over the course of an episode.
Do you remember? He tells the story as to how he was exiled from Cardassian, but he tells it 5 times in different ways.
And they're different.
They're different every single time. So they're always like taking a piss out of these terrible backstories. And then Bashir goes, you know, which one of those stories was true? And he goes, Doctor, they're all true. You know? He's a terror.
Yeah. So we know something about him. Like, right from the get-go, we know that he has some mysterious backstory and he's sort of exiled from Cardassia. And then it comes into focus in The Wire a bit. But this is kind of the first episode where we actually see him acting as a kind of member of the Obsidian Order. You know, he's able to go in and give orders and he knows call signs and stuff like that. And that's new, isn't it?
It is. And this is also they've kind of revealed he has a shady past. They've lent on him a couple of times, like in the station. This is the first time as well that he's ever gone with them as part of the crew. And that's something that plays out a lot later on.
So I really like what they do with his character here. He gets some really sort of great quips and stuff, but they also kind of, like, Gamor tells Kira at the end, don't get too comfortable with him. He's not one of your regulars. He's not just going to help you. He will betray you if he wants to. And I think that that's a good thing. So we get to have our cake and eat it too. We get to have him go on a mission with them and kind of help out in sort of upsettingly unexpected ways in one case. And then we just get told, actually, this is not the new status quo. He is still weird and mysterious and we don't know what motivates him. This isn't him becoming your friend or one of the gang or anything like that. And I think that's good, you know, to keep that going.
They never forget that as well, do they? Because later on in this season, he's torturing Odo, if you remember, in the Dias cast.
Right.
End of series four, he's trying to take over the Defiant so he can send missiles down to destroy the changeling planet. You know, don't tell me the Klingons would object to a little bit of genocide in the name of self-defense. You know, he's an anti-hero, isn't he? And frankly, they're usually the most interesting characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and it's certainly, you know, like, it's very different from anything that you would see on Star Trek The Next Generation, I think. And that's one of the things that they get to do. What do you think? Should we go in?
Let's do it. I mean, I've got some more trivia, but I can drop it whilst we're talking through the episode.
Excellent. Okay. So I will count us in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're off.
Okay. So can I very quickly just read you something from Memory Alpha that you might find absolutely fascinating?
Yep, go on.
So it says Robert Hewitt Wolf's original idea for this episode revolved around O'Brien discovering that he was a deep cover Cardassian, which would work as well, because they've established that he's a terrible old racist too.
That's right.
And basically the inference was going to be that the O'Brien from Encounter of Farpoint was a Cardassian Asian. Right. On the Enterprise. So they were going to, like, deep dive right back into TNG. But then they couldn't get past the idea. And this was going to stick as well. So O'Brien actually was going to be a Cardassian, turned into a human. But then they were like, well, no, but he's had Molly. So if he's a Cardassian, surely Molly would be half Cardassian. And Cardassian. So they were like, okay, thank God we ducked out of that one. So they chose Kira instead.
Which is just an obvious choice, a brilliant choice. And did you say that they considered making it stick for Kira?
Yeah, so the end of the episode, it was supposed to be ambiguous. So I thought they were genuinely going to say, yeah, she's a Cardassian. They were actually going to, what he wanted to do was drive the point home that your identity is your experiences and not your birthright.
Yeah.
But he says, I'm glad we didn't do it. You know, like, it would have felt like a bit of a betrayal of the character.
Yeah, I think so. So I want to know why no one is looking at the fucking camera when they're on these video calls. Like, she's
Nathan, I don't know if you can see, but there are faces there inside that glass window on the wall. I believe it might be reflecting.
So we're in the Replimat, aren't we? Taking this personal phone call in the Replimat, which is a sort of crappy nothing kind of said, isn't it? But yes, like, no one is looking at anyone. I don't know what's happening here. I guess video conferences weren't a big thing yet in 1990, whatever. Here we go.
This random woman just turning up, you know, to get the plot going.
Yes.
But I did like all the different methods they used to try and convince us that this could be the case. Because I think for, like, the first sort of third of this episode, we're going, well, there's just no way, is there? Go on, you've got a point.
Yeah. So who is the person that we throw to who looks like they're going to be really important because they get the last shot before we go into the opening credits as if they're the crucial person?
So she's the person that follows Kira onto the shuttle that knocks her out and takes her to Cardassia. She's there on Cardassia, isn't she? Yeah, she's there when he says, wake her up.
What's her deal?
Well, like, I just think she's a Cardassian agent that's had extra latex put on her face to make it look a bit different.
Well, maybe she could have saved time and told Entek how many, you know, Federation were on the base and all of that sort of thing. Like, for God's sake, she's there.
Yeah, but they
she's
never right wanted there. That information, did they?
No, just, I guess not.
They're just asking true. Those questions to try and make her think
yeah.
that she is the spy. But yeah, all the different things that they use. So they use, obviously, the man in a minute who goes, you know, you were there, weren't you, at Ellensburg? Theory something.
Yeah.
You used to wear your hair a bit longer. So he just turns out to be someone the Cardassians have paid off.
And he disappears. We never see him again. He's gone. But
they probably executed him, I reckon.
Well, maybe. But I mean, the thing is, right, that it could be true. Like, it's entirely possible that this is going to be an episode about the missing week in Kira's life. She can't remember the thing that happened to her when she was on this prison planet, you know, like, and that's the mystery. And so it's not obvious at all to us that they're not telling the truth at that point in the story, right? Yeah.
I think the only thing about the whole concept is we're just going, well, no, they're not going to drop the Kira was a Cardassian 2.5 seasons into this show.
No. But yeah. And so it does become the, how do we get out of this? Because by the time, like, there's a moment where she loses it, like, she smashes the mirror and starts crying. And
that's the bit I absolutely love.
Yeah.
For lots of reasons. But because I was getting to a point where, like, they're never going to convince her. And then they show her the body. Then they show her the recording.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, my God. And then when she is convinced, I'm like, are we going here? When I first watched it.
Yeah.
And so so for like 2.5 seconds before the twist is dropped, I was convinced for a second. So I thought, this is playing some really interesting games with me.
Because the other thing is, it's kind of like, how the hell do we get out of this? Like, what is really happening? This is, you know, it can't be this. So what are they going to pull? You know, like, what are they going to pull? And, you know, part of the...
But I was still waiting for the twist to be, like, it's something about Kira, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I was never looking at any of the other characters. I was like, she knows something, or she did something in the past they're trying to get back at her for.
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know?
Well, do you remember Future Imperfect, where Riker thinks, like, Riker is in this sort of holodeck simulation? He thinks they're trying to get some information out of him, and it is that kind of thing that's set up to be a kind of, I mean, this is a sort of standard Star Trek thing, and the twist is that it's not the main character who's the main character here. It's Gamore. And so that's kind of brilliant and unexpected, and it gets out of it really neatly, I think. I think it's clever.
Here we go now. She's off to Bajor to try and figure out
what the thing is. And that's
And it could have been, couldn't it? It could have been that she just had this week.
Yeah, that's right.
And they took her memories away because something so appalling happened or something like that. Yeah. You know, that's, and they've done that in Star Trek before as well.
Of course. That's absolutely a thing they could do. And that's, I mean, that is part of the fun here, because this is part of a long tradition of weird high concept, you know, Star Trek stories that dates all the way back to the original. And so a lot of things could be happening, I think.
You know, the only time they've been able to actually get away with, you know, someone being a different species to the one that we thought they were, was Seska.
Yeah.
But she's a secondary character, and that's the only sort of time they would do it, isn't it? Yeah. It's when it's somebody we see every now and again, and it's not really going to impact the series.
She's not in the opening credits or anything like that. That was pretty great, though, wasn't it?
This was such a savvy move, I think, because Bashir was not a popular character, but Garak was instantly popular. And bringing Garak and Bashir together in The Wire and then having that relationship play out, I think people then started looking forward to these scenes, you know, just because Garak was in there.
And so is that the first... Is The Wire when they first become friends?
No, it's... the first episode they have together is Garak's second episode, Cardassians. Where he keeps waking him up in the middle of the night saying, come on, Doctor, we're going to Bajor to figure out what's happening with these Cardassian orphans. But of course,
there's a really funny line in this scene.
Which one?
So it's the one where he really wants to be able to say, I haven't left this station in a number of years, except that we did an episode where the two of them went somewhere. And so he has to say, apart from that episode that we had.
There's a wonderful line in The Wire where he says to Bashir, what is it? I can't believe I enjoyed eating mediocre food, and the highlight of my week was having lunch with you.
With you, yeah.
He's savage, isn't he, when he wants to be? Okay, so we're about to head to Cardassia now, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. So she's disappeared. Here we are on Cardassia, and I really like Cardassian decor. I'm a big fan. And I think it was a great idea.
Ooh, you must love the station then.
Yeah, well, that's making the station. Yeah, that's right. Making the station Cardassian rather than Federation, we've said before, is a work of genius. Here we go. So there is the money shot. It's her looking in the mirror.
It's nice that they wait a second as well, isn't it? They're sort of in the half dark.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they did the same thing in Face of the Enemy. Do you remember the whole pre-title sequence is in darkness? She goes up to the mirror, then turns the light on and just goes, oh! Like, this is all a bit subtle compared to Face of the Enemy, you know?
So she's put a lot of makeup on, or they've put makeup on her while she's been asleep. So are we assuming, so the spoon head, right, that the Cardassian ladies, like, put eyeshadow on that? Is that what's happening? And I think they do one of the little neck things, like the neck things are sometimes colored as well. And then she's wearing sort of black. And so what she called, she's called Ilyana and things. It's almost like
Ilyana Gamor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like a Russian agent or something, you know.
Well, that's the idea of the Cardassians, isn't it? A sort of Russian intelligence and.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, like there's that thing about an occupying force. There's something about the Cardassians, you know, you think of like the Romulans or the Klingons, it's like the Cold War and there's just two big power blocks and stuff. And the Cardassians come in when that narrative is breaking down, which it is in the 90s where things are localized. There's stuff happening in the Middle East and things and so on. And so I kind of think the Cardassians kind of come from that, you know, the idea of a occupying force is different, I think, from Russia. Because I think in Star Trek The Next Generation, it's like the Romulans are like the Russians, aren't they? Like when we go in Unification Parts 1 and 2, we go and they have a secret police, the Tal Shiar, and the population.
Yeah.
Yeah, the population are kind of scared of them and stuff like that. Yeah.
And I think the Cardassians are probably more successful attempt at doing that than the Romulans. They sort of lose the Romulans somewhere along the way in 90s Trek, don't they? And this took over as like evil force in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah, yeah. And it's because they've got a whole show centered on them.
Yeah, well, quite. Yeah. Come the end of DS9, you know, you're spending half your episodes on Cardassia Prime watching that drama play out.
Yeah.
Oh, I love those scenes. Well, that's Weyoun and Damar, isn't it? You know?
Funny.
Or Weyoun and Dukat.
Yeah.
And it's like we said before, they do that savvy move of having very vivid characters representing like the Cardassians, you know?
Group.
So you want to go back to them all the time. Entek was supposed to be a regular, you know, originally. They were thinking of that he was going to come back like Dukat. So they were going to have the sort of a series of Cardassian regulars. And then at the end of the episode, they were like, no, we really wanted to drive over the point, don't trust Garak. Because the inference is these two were friends. And then he just murders him at the end of the episode. I rather liked him, you know?
It's so good. That's such a great line. This guy is pretty great, I think.
The performances are brilliant, I think. This dialogue is not always easy to get your mouth around, you know, and they make it effortless. There's a great story about, I can never get this right, Nana.
Oh, I think Nana, I keep hearing that now. So that's...
Nana Visitor was like, okay, no, I'm done for the day, because she was claustrophobic. And they obviously put her in this car, that's your makeup. And director was like, no, we've still got more shots to do. And she's like, no, you don't. realize I am done. And she started ripping the makeup off her face. I think of all the people, of all the actors on DS9, she was the one that was in charge of herself, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah, she could just get away with that.
It's a great story, you know, totally off piece of her going up to Iris Stephen Bear in Ops and going, yep. What the hell is this? You're putting me and Odo together. And they had a scathing row over the console in Ops. Yeah. And she knew her mind.
Look at that. The matte painting of the exterior of Cardassia with the big TV. The big Cardassia TV. Sort of
very Orwellian. Is that the idea of that?
Like with a big brother is thing.
Watching you.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, they just it's not the best effects
in the world, and they do get better at doing it, but it does drive the point home, doesn't it? That they're constantly getting this propaganda in their ears.
Yeah. Yeah. Which then makes a domestic dissident something that is credible. Because have we had that before? Like, have we had any Cardassian dissidents before? We know about the Obsidian Order.
I don't think so. But it's something that comes up again because I think they're trying to get them off planet in Way of the Warrior at one point.
Yeah.
The Tapa Council, you know, which is the dissidents that have taken control of the government.
Right.
It is a lovely little thread that runs through DS9, sort of the Cardassian politics and how that changes.
And somehow Dukat's always in charge of something.
Well, it's Mark Alamer. We want him in charge, you know.
That's right.
Charming as hell.
So this
and speaking of charming, we have Lawrence Pressman here as Gamorre. Do you know, he was in an X-File episode. Did you ever see that one?
Where
it was this crazy cult that kidnapped Scully and they wanted to put this horrible slug in her and he was head of the cult and he was absolutely chilling. He was so scary in it.
Is that early on that when she gets kidnapped?
No, it's once Robert Patrick's in it, so the acting's really good. So everyone stopped watching at this point, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But you've got scenes of him smiling his head off as horrific acts of violence are occurring just over his shoulder. It's really scary.
He is really good here, and never for a second did I think he was faking it. Like I could, like he's playing it. Yeah. Yeah, I just thought he also thought that Kira was his daughter, that he genuinely believed it. And I mean last night,
it's
and
a bit
maybe
of a double
I
edge,
had some
isn't it?
Memories.
Because if he played it sort of knowingly, like obviously the actor's read the script, he knows where this is going, he knows as far as his character is concerned, this is genuine. Yeah, it would ring false, wouldn't it, if he was playing it sort of slightly, I'm putting this on.
Yeah, and if he was putting it on, that would ruin it. Like if he was kind of leering or unconvincing, but he's really properly convincing, like he really sells that it's that she's his daughter.
Although I don't know, they found somebody who looks so like his daughter.
They even say that in dialogue, it just looks exactly like her. It just doesn't matter. It's
fair enough.
Whatever.
We've just got to go with it, haven't we?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Every major race. With these very constructive episodes with twists, there are a few allowances you have to make.
Yeah.
I think the rewards are worth the allowances here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not always the case.
So is he the one, he hears about this. He hears about this and he alerts them. So he's on the rescue mission.
Running thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
About Garak's contacts.
Yeah. That's right.
Remember that bit in the Power Moonlight where he says, "Oh, I contacted all my
burns
now they're
them
all dead.
They're all dead." Yeah.
Although there is a very funny bit in Improbable Cause later on in the season where he's contacted a load of people and he finds out they're all dead and they're basically all of his enemies. He's deliberately contacted them, given them this information, so they'll all be executed. He's great.
So that's the big one. That's the big two-parter where we actually find out something substantial about his backstory, right? Improbable Cause.
Well, and Arbryn Tain comes in, doesn't he?
Yes.
And it shows there's an alliance between the Romulans and the Cardassians. They're going off to destroy. It's a big sort of both character and arc two-parter.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of fun,
isn't it? I'm still not sure that's the best of the season. I still think Past Tense might be the best of the season.
Which is an arc at all. It is really good, isn't it? I really like it a lot.
Oh, I just love him trying to reach out to her constantly. And she's being so horrible to him, isn't she? She goes, "You're good. Really good. You're never going to convince me that I'm a Cardassian."
Yeah, look, see if you look at her makeup, and they do this with all the female Cardassians, not that there are that many of them, she's got some blue paint on the neck, like one of those sort of neck scales on each side is painted blue. That's so weird.
I like all the little details that they add, you know, where he talks about his wife being an inquisitor at the library or something like that. And so he's obviously got a position that he's quite privileged as well. So there's still this sort of sense that, he's a nice guy, but, I don't necessarily do nice things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, inquisitor at a university I just thought it meant a researcher or someone who did examinations or something. It's a slightly sinister title, but
Inquisitor is, isn't it? Yeah, it's that word. Yeah.
But he's rich and privileged, and his daughter has gone off in this sort of super patriotic way to do this thing.
I know you're going to mock this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I like the fact that they put a window in this room, and I like the fact that they changed the lighting from day to night all the time.
Yeah,
I do too. It just means it's more visually interesting than just being stuck in a room, you know?
Yeah. Also, there's something really sort of glamorously, like, look at how deco the furniture is. It's so
look at the table. I mean, how'd you put anything on that table?
It looks great. The furniture looks really, really terrific.
Nathan, I love this scene so much. It's Sisko and Garak, and he's trying to basically blackmail him into going on the mission.
Yeah, into coming.
But this is very witty dialogue where he's like, "If there's any sign of danger, Commander, you're on your own. Mr. Garak, that's the first time you've ever been honest with me. How perceptive of you, Commander."
Yes, if I was allowed on Cardassian, do you think I'd be here? Like, really?
Do you know what? The line that made me laugh the most was when he goes, why would I care what the Bajoran government think of me?
So this is the threat. Wow, that's so good, isn't it?
Sisko has been pulling this trick off since Emissary. Do you remember with Quark?
He does with Odo Nog, goes, right?
You know, at first I didn't think I was going to like him. And in this, when Garak's in his bind and he's like, "Oh, fuck it, I've got to go." And then you cut to Odo and he's got a massive smile on his face. Like, he's loving it.
And his response here, yes, it is. Commander, this is extortion. And it's really funny because at this point, he's not as fierce as he ends up being. You know, it's a much, much more low-key, underplayed performance.
I really noticed that in this.
Yeah,
compared to like AR-558, and I know they're showing him, you know, on the edge there. But
he's still, But here, like, he is kind of underplaying it. And so the accusation of extortion, when he kind of responds to it in this sort of, it kind of is, you know, like there's no steel there. It's actually really quite funny.
Do you remember the bit later on where Odo says, I saw him down the corridor checking out the weapons. He was going, "I was just taking a walk to stretch my legs," you know, like.
That's right. It's so good.
It's these sort of dynamics that really rate DS9 for, because there are so many interesting characters. There are so many interesting pairings. Yeah. And, you know, when they get it right, it just sings.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? And there's a lot happening, like having an A and a B plot here too, because you can imagine a version of this that just focuses on Kira, right? And the whole thing is about Kira. But
well, that's the face of the enemy, isn't it? You don't cut back away from that Romulan ship, I think, for half the episode.
Yes, we don't. Yes, exactly right. And they're kind of surprised, aren't they, when when Deanna appears on the screen or something. Like,
It's brilliant. Yeah, and I know exactly that it's her.
Yeah. Whereas here, having an A and a B plot and having a plot on Garrick and doing the thing where the A and B plot are actually related to one another for
a change.
They're
going in the same direction, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's not just some random comedy plot plus this very dramatic A plot.
Kira wants an arboretum or something. Like, you know.
Oh, that was the one we did, wasn't it? House of Pork.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So boring.
And you were like, this terrible plot. Keiko acting appallingly. Oh, this is great. Where she's giving misinformation. Oh, well. Obvious misinformation about the station.
But she's not even trying to hide that it's misinformation as well. It is just her kind of going, yeah, I'm not really intimidated here, so fuck off. I'm not even going to pretend to try and convince you with this. I'm going to just tell you the most patent and absurd lies possible. It's pretty great.
And somehow, you know, there's just this massive smile after that. And somehow, even through that hideous Cardassian makeup, she still has a fabulous smile, you know.
Oh, of course she does. Just a beautiful smile. Yeah, she's really good.
But, you know, in the same breath, I believe Entek as well. Like, obviously, he knows that's not Gamor's daughter. Yes. But I think he's playing it well. He's playing onto that sort of, you are my agent. You are my best agent that I sent out to Bajor.
But it's this, isn't it? It's like she looks like she's winning. She's not going to be broken. She's just going to tell him lies and whatever. And then we bring this in, and I actually think this is really quite shocking. And there's just a couple of details.
Well, I remember first watching this, and I kind of sat upright when it was like Kira's body.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh.
Yeah, so we bring in the cryogenic chamber, and she has the long hair that the guy in dialogue said that she had. You know, you used to wear it longer, and here it is. And also there's kind of like ice burn, you know, like the face, like the skin on her face is red. And do you know what I mean? Like it isn't just Nanad lying there looking lovely in makeup. It's actually a little bit shocking in a way, you know, like it's not going to be gory or anything because it's Deep Space Nine, but is it.
Is it a dummy?
No, it's
they're
her.
Pulling off
it's just
the two,
her.
The two of them in that shot together really well.
No, it's not super demanding, I think. No one's walking around anyone else or anything.
I don't know. We have established sometimes those shots can be pretty agonizing when they try and superimpose one person over the same person.
Yeah. But it is only sort of
I'm
very
glad
brief.
She said, she goes, oh, this is a holosuite. This, for all I know, this whole thing is... That's what I was thinking all along, that they were... And they do pull that off later on in Inquisition when Bashir is being tested by Section 31, and you don't find out till right at the end of the episode. The whole episode from the start has been a massive con. Yeah.
It's a sort of Lower Decks thing, computer end program, you know, like when Mariner keeps saying that when Boyan was talking about his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. You can count on them to play it for laughs.
Yeah.
Oh, and I liked all this dialogue as well, where he's going, well, you know, why would I go to all these lengths to try and convince you of this? You know, like, what am I going to get out of this? If it's information I wanted, I would have tortured you by now, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So it is very convincingly presented.
Yeah. And that's kind of the point, isn't it? Because she looks like she's going to win, and then we get the death thing and then his reaction as well, him saying, no, this isn't about getting information out of you, which is absolutely true. We discover it's not about that at all. I don't think we ever think, oh, look at that terrible sky outside.
back to TNG series one again.
Yeah. It's just a meter away from her.
But I love the way Gamor just comes in and goes, oh, you tripped a silent alarm, but off you go, you know, like he's not even going to try and stop her.
No, that's right. Because he is.
He loves
he's
her.
He's really good.
Yeah, absolutely
he does
loves
love
her.
And he.
Which is why the moment that really got me in this, that I found quite moving, was when she's resistant of him all the way through. Then she has that moment of, oh shit, am I a Cardassian? She smashes the mirror. And then he says, look, I'm a selfish old man. I'm going to have to get you out of here because they are going to break you. And then she chooses that moment to start hugging his legs. And she grabs hold of his legs and just really holds on to him. And I thought, oh, this is lovely.
It's really good, really isn't effective. It? And just presenting him as a good man as well. Like, initially we think he's part of the deception, and at this point we have no way of knowing that he isn't. Now we get the recording, right?
I think this is what happens when, you know, you and I have said that, you know, Star Trek can be known to bring in, you know, Murder, She Wrote extra of the week to play the latest villain or whatever, you know, these dreadful sort of day players. But this is what happens when you bring in really thoughtful actors. Yeah. I'm not saying this is Shakespeare or anything like that.
No,
thinking about their relationship and they're delivering that to the audience. And it is just a little bit more sophisticated than your standard, you know, Star Trek plot of the week.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Oh, I like how she played this as well. How she played this with a sort of higher register to her voice.
Yeah.
Childish,
like she's a younger
tint.
Woman. Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, presumably it's been a decade or something, like how, you know, it's been a while.
But I'm not sure it works like this, you know. I mean, they might have, I know people that look like each other, but they don't sound like each other as well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it kind of like once we're making people up to be Cardassians, all bets are off, you know, the normal rules of things don't apply. And again, that's a deep fake and we're all thinking it, right? So we're thinking, actually, that's fake, you know. Or is it? Is it fake?
Well, so what do you think that actually breaks her in the end then? Like, or
well,
makes
I think
her
that. I think it's the body.
Genuinely.
I think it's the body. I think it's Entek saying, we're not interested in getting information out of you. We would have already had we just kidnapped you to kind of we would have just tortured you. And we knew that. That's what happens to Picard. We would have just tortured you for information and we'd have it already. So the body, that, and the video, but now I'm what is the video meant to be real?
Yeah, I think so.
You were assuming it was. It wasn't just a deep fake made, which is, yeah. So that's where it falls to bits. Is really like it is just okay, right? Like what's that?
Oh, I'm wondering if it's like just Gamora's very genuine kindness as well. It sort of breaks her in the end. Like,
I
can't find a chink in his armor. I can't see.
Well, and because there isn't one, because he genuinely believes that she's Ilyana. And so there's that as well. Yeah. What's the inciting incident, though? We'll get there. We'll see. But it's just, what's the moment where she breaks? Like, when does she go and attack the mirror?
Oh, I think it might be
It's in the next scene. Yeah, but I can't remember.
I love
what
this
exactly
scene, though, with Garak stepping in. Commander, I can get us out of this.
Yes, and it's so unexpected, and he rattles off a code that he just knows, and he gets it completely right. It's so good.
You know what's wonderful? The sort of inoffensive nature of being a tailor, you know?
My favorite line of the episode, and I think it's his best line delivery, because I think anyone can kind of mug and chew the scenery and smile and deliver things in a sort of camp way, you know, but the way he delivers the line about how he just picked up that clearance verification code while he was hemming someone's trousers, and like he sort of, he slightly throws it away, and it's so funny. Like it's the funny thing about it is he's lying. He doesn't expect anyone in the room to believe what he's saying. He's just kind of reflexively lying because it's funny. It's just great. Then he does that like silly smile.
Don't say anything to get a laugh. But do you know what's funny? Is then they play up to this in Way of the Warrior. Do you remember they're like, oh, we need to get some information to the Cardassians?
Oh, yeah. And so they discuss it
while call Mr. Garak. He's aiming, yeah, I need some new pants.
I need to be measured. Yeah. But again, that's another thing where Mr. Garak knows full well what they're trying to do. They're not trying to trick Garak into telling someone something. Yeah, so this is it.
There is a lot of unspoken stuff in this show, which I really like that.
Yeah, so what's happening
that
here?
That camera is right in her face, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't think she's afraid of it at all.
No. No, she really goes for it in this. And, you know, like, she's someone wearing a lot of very silly-looking latex, and she just kind of goes, no, fuck it. You know, this is sort of melodrama. This is, you know, we're going with the kind of emotional thing here, and it really works. And they're milking it because they've done it before. They're just coming back to this. She's incredibly good at this stuff, and so they just keep getting her to do it.
In the Ties of Blood and Water, when Gamor comes back, yeah?
Right, yeah.
After he dies, there's a scene in the infirmary where the camera's quite far back in the set, and it just slowly goes in on Nana Visitor while she tells the story of watching her own dad die.
Right.
And it goes on for about 3 minutes, and she's genuinely crying. Yeah. And it's like this 3-minute monologue that she has with the camera just there. It's Avery Brooks directing it. He directs it really well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, she's so good at this stuff. She's so good at capturing emotion and making you feel.
Yeah, she's seriously good.
Here we go now. Smashing it. They do got a thing about mirrors in DS9. Yeah? Do you remember when Damar realizes he's got to do something about the Dominion and he looks at himself in the mirror and he throws the canard at it and looks at his distorted face? Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, this is because it's about identity and because it's her rejecting who she appears to be, you know, reacting badly, because I think this is the point where she thinks that's her. Like, she's looking at herself in the mirror and she hates it. Like, I think isn't that what that means? Like, that's why she's punching the mirror with the image of Cardassian her there, because she thinks that that probably is her. And
see, look, here she's still quite, she's in his lap, but she won't quite.
No.
It's when he then says, I'm going to get you out of here. And she goes, what? And she actually says through tears, like, you do that for me.
Yeah. I think like I think making him more affectionate with her would have been creepy, you know, because it hadn't been invited and stuff like that. But, and I guess he grabs her arm and holds her because, like he goes to put his hand on her head. Okay. I think that's okay. And then she's hugging his knee.
Then he properly holds her.
It's nice.
And he plays that line brilliantly where he goes, you're my daughter, Ileana. Yeah, there's nothing I wouldn't do for you.
Yeah,
you
know, and he absolutely.
And even at
means
this point,
it.
When I was originally watching it, going, "What a bastard! If he's tricking her, you know."
Yeah. But I didn't think he was. Like, I just didn't think he was. But that didn't mean that I guessed the twist.
I think in terms of sort of misdirection, this is one of the better Star Trek episodes in terms of leading you off on a red herring, you know?
Yeah. The only detail that doesn't work is, of course, that she looks like Ileana, so much like Ileana, that the father would be fooled by it.
And the thing I was less convinced about in the second episode, in Ties of Blood and Water, is it is portrayed as a father-daughter relationship at that point. Whereas we've never... Maybe if he'd popped up a few times and then he popped up on his deathbed... Oh, no, I was just like, they've had this one little adventure on Cardassia Prime, and now suddenly, you know, he's taken up the mantle of being her dad.
Well, maybe they've communicated or something, like they could look. And so Gamor has a sort of pretty friend, kind of pretty.
Well, he's pretty for a Cardassian.
Yeah, they have bad hair. Very, very bad hair.
Where do you imagine they get all those wigs from?
I know, they're so terrible, aren't they?
We need half a ton of matted black hair, please.
That's right.
Can I just say, right, with the amount of latex on this, man, those sets must have stunk when they ripped all that off at the end of the day, mustn't they? Imagine.
It's so ridiculous. That's the one thing about Deep Space Nine is that it's this space drama where most people have like massive amounts of latex on their face.
And it's like this, when they treat it so seriously and you're going, how did you do this? Like-
It's pretty incredible. And it's not an original Trek thing. Like you've got Spock's ears, but basically aliens aren't just kind of Americans with lumps of ridges of latex in various places. And it's not really a Kurtzman Trek thing, except insofar as we're doing races that were created, you know, in the 90s. It is just a peculiarly 90s Star Trek way of doing aliens. It's funny.
Weird, then Enterprise came along and they started sort of pulling back from the latex, didn't they?
Yeah.
And suddenly everyone looked really boring.
That's right.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Maybe it was fun that you all looked a bit quirky. But I do remember I was sitting watching an episode of Deep Space Nine once and my mum's friend was over and it was an Odo and like, Quark
what
scene.
Do these people have on their face?
And she was going, what's wrong with his ears? What's wrong with his face? Like, she's going, is this a drama? You know,
it's preposterous.
You see that sort of dramatic close up then on
Gamora when the
guy got shot.
Yeah, and N-Tech
I think that was the one bit of dynamic camera work in the entire episode. Yeah.
Is this a Lady Cardassian in the background? With the gun?
What a pleasant woman, Nathan. So this is nice. And this is where obviously the two plots now come together.
Yeah.
Although it does make me laugh that they just sort of walk into the room.
and then they
throw the bag. Like, whoever throws a bag like that into a room, it turns out that it's Odo.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he's had lots of bag being experience, hasn't he? We've seen him as a bag before. It's kind of a thing.
Oh, and this is great because now N'Tech can get to be massively camp and villainous, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the bag is bizarre, isn't it? He just throws the bag, N'Tech kind of looks at it, then we get that shitty special effect.
Look, I used to love his morphing effects until you started going on about how terrible they are.
It is terrible. It's
I love the concept though. Like they don't use it enough, but I do love the concept of it.
It is a bit of a crappy high, you know, crappy high concept science fiction thing, which you don't
need. This is Star Trek. We are here for crappy high concepts.
except that you've got Rene Aubergenois, you don't actually really need that. He doesn't need a concept. And then they turn it into something super interesting, you know, by inventing
founders. Line. Major, I've never seen you looking so ravishing.
I know. That's so great. Fortunately, he's gay. He's not coming on to
her. I don't think there's any doubt at all glamorous. That Garak and N'Tech have been fucking at some point. They're so camp,
yes,
this
okay.
pair.
Yeah.
He does say, a pity, I rather liked him.
It's really
after
great.
After he's killed him.
So they turn around, he pulls a gun just to make it okay. And somehow Garak expected it because he turns right around and then just disintegrates him. You know, like he just assumes that N'Tech's reaching for a gun at that point. And then that line, oh, I rather liked him. But it's still not as good as the hemming some pants line, which I just think is absolute comedy gold.
I think the conclusion that we're drawing here is pretty much everything he says is brilliant.
A lot. Yeah, yeah. But that, yeah, it's the hemming some pants and then he goes straight into his next line, come on, we'd better get out of here. He doesn't sort of mug or wait for applause or anything like that. So that's why I like that line so much.
Do you remember that sequence in Purgatory Shadow where he tries to convince Worf that he wants to join Starfleet Academy? And Worf believes him, and then he realizes he's been made a fool of. And Garak goes, why have you done this deception? And he goes, because lying is a skill like any other. And if you want to maintain to a level of excellence, you have to practice constantly.
But I mean, the thing is that we know that he's lying all the time, and that's absolutely fine. Like, I think that's the hilarious thing about him.
I thought this was really sweet as well. Sometimes I don't really buy these sort of touching goodbyes that we have at the end of Star Trek episodes. But when she says, you know, the payoff to their relationship here is, I think your daughter must have loved you very much. And then he held back the tears.
It's such
quite
a
moving.
It's a really corny fucking line, isn't it? It's so corny, but she delivers it so well that I just buy it completely. It's really
good. But it's his reaction as well. He's got tears in his eyes.
It's really well played for something that is just as cheesy as possible.
Oh, I'm scared to watch the other episode with you now then, Ties of Blood more, if you think this is cheesy.
Well, like, but it's the two of them. You know, it. You just sell it. And certainly we've had that scene of them, you know, him comforting her when she's distressed, which, you know, you buy, I think.
But you know what really made me laugh? I was thinking, I watch Star Trek now, thinking, oh no, what's Nathan going to think of this? This is how I now watch Star Trek. And it was the bit there where he's gone off. And she's just holding the jewelry and just staring at it off camera with tears in her eyes. I'm like, who actually does that? Who stands there?
No one
going,
does it.
I've just had a really awful moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally bought it. Look at her. Look at her. Look at her. She's so good.
It only happens on TV, though.
I want you to know something. Yeah, you know. But look, she's just absolutely, she knows it's as cheesy as any of us do. You know, like she knows that. But she's really playing it exactly how it needs to be played. She's giving it a bit of sort of proper meaning. She's good.
I just think she's an incredibly savvy actress.
And beautiful. Oh, look. And his response is quite good as well because it's sort of understated. And he kind of
he doesn't quite know how to react, brings himself under control.
It's good. Like, I think it's just a well-played, it's a well-played scene by both of them.
Do you think, I want to ask you sort of coming out of this episode, do you think Nana Visitor's the most accomplished performer on Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say so.
I think it's a double whammy with her and Renee Auberjonois.
Yeah.
So it's terrifying talent when they come together, the pair of them.
That's right. However cross she was about it, apparently.
Except, I don't know, though. Do you remember that scene in Dramatis Personae where she goes to his office and starts flirting with him? Yeah. The evil Kira. Yeah. We were going, well, what is happening here? These two fantastic actors. Like...
this dreadful material.
They're probably there reading a script in the morning going, have we got to sell this? Really?
How do we do this? Let's just throw it away. Something better will be along next week. I thought that was
Isn't that good, though?
Yeah.
What a strong episode.
Proper solid high concept stuff that does cheat, but it's a forgivable cheat, and it does surprise you in a way I think that's kind of satisfying, and it has some good performances, it's got some funny lines, and it's very Deep Space Nine.
That is important later on as well. So it is achieving a lot. Do you know what? I'm coming to the conclusion that the standalone episodes in series 1 to 4, that's where the standalones were at their best,
right?
And the sort of the arc stuff is what really worked for me in the latter half. So I think things like Blood Oath, Duet, things like The Wire, you know, those sort of intimate character stories that was doing a lot of sort of the building blocks, so the arc stuff was satisfying later on, that those characters were all established. And I've said this to you before, like the stories are almost sort of self-perpetuating because the characters are so strong. All you need to do is bring in a concept and they can react to it because we've established them and we know them so well. And this is just a really, really good example of that.
Yeah. But it's like solidly well done Deep Space Nine. Like it's even though it kind of borrows the high concept from Face of the Enemy, it does it in a completely Deep Space Nine kind of way. And it just reminds me what I like about this show. And it is that it's set in a place in a way that other Star Treks hadn't been up until this point. And it's a place that's sort of detailed. It's a, you know, cheesy Star Trek place and all of that, but it's Star Trek and that's what we want. And it just means there are things, there's a background against which to do things and a context in which this stuff makes sense. And I just think it's terribly entertaining and accomplished, and there's some good performances that are much better than they need to be. I, you know, it's it's exactly what I watch Star Trek for, I think.
I think the approaches of TNG and DS9 to this same concept is highlighted in something you said in the last episode, actually, and that is how they very rarely dive halfway through the story. Usually we establish everything. Well, actually, Face of the Enemy does do that. It opens up and she's already been turned into a Romulan. And that's the very first scene of her looking in the mirror. And it kind of means the concept is the important thing in that episode.
Yes.
That's what that episode is sold on, is just the idea that Troy is a Romulan and she's a fish out of water and she's got to cope with it. Whereas this has like a ton of establishing stuff before we get to that moment. But it's doing a lot of work that pays off at the end of the episode. So it's kind of a bit more, I keep saying the word sophisticated, maybe that's too strong. It's a bit more nuanced.
I think it is. I think it's more sophisticated. I mean, in a sense, the person wakes up as a member of a different alien species is a concept that we've already had. So they're deploying it again, but they're deploying it in a different context in order to do much different things with, I think. Yeah, I really liked it.
Well, I'm glad we managed to redeem Deep Space Nine for you in this episode.
Mission accomplished. All right, it's that time of the episode, and we are going to choose what we're going to watch next time. I chose last time, so it's your turn now, Joe. What series are we going to choose from?
The original series, and that's all I'm putting in there.
Excellent.
Because if there's one thing I like talking about even more than DS9, which I never thought I'd say, is the original series on Untitled Star Trek Project.
Oh, okay.
We always have a blast when we talk.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We have had some good ones, though.
If it's fantastic, they're genuinely the best. And if it's terrible, it's the best to talk about.
Well, I think we've only done one terrible one, haven't we? Have we only done the one terrible one, Spock's Brain?
You thought Spock's Brain was terrible. I thought it was massively enjoyable.
Yeah, terrible.
Not as enjoyable as Sub Rosa, but yeah.
No, that's true.
Okay, well, look, I'm gonna press the button.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it might be the first time again.
What
season
is it?
Season 2, episode 15. The Trouble with Tribbles.
Oh my God, yes. Okay. Yeah. We have to do that.
I'm not sure I can actually bring myself to press the button again. And I always press the button again.
No, we just have to do that. But I'm going to give you homework as well, because I want you to watch.
Oh, go on.
I want you to watch The Trouble with Edward as well, which is from Short Treks.
Okay.
And it's an episode that stars John Benjamin from Archer and Bob's Burgers as a science officer on board a science ship, and it also involves Tribbles. And it gives us a bit of backstory because it's set 10 years before Trouble with Tribbles. So I'm going to get you to watch that.
Well, then I'm going to give you some homework as well.
Okay, yeah.
That's fair. And I'm going to ask you to watch Trials and Tribulations.
Oh, I will do that happily.
Tribble-a-thon.
Exactly. I adore Trials and Tribulations, and that's perhaps the one episode of Deep Space Nine that I've watched more than any other. I just think it's really terrific.
I think that's the same for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah.
The last thing I want is a call from Temporal Investigations when I get back.
So great. Is there an animated series episode that has Tribbles in it?
Oh, there is.
I might watch that too.
Oh, should we just do all four? Yeah, I might do a triple day off.
Yeah, I think I'll watch the animated series one. I'll rewatch all of them. The Trouble with Edward's about 8 minutes long. It's not a big drama, and it is really properly funny, like extremely funny in a way that Kurtzman Trek can be.
I'm almost willing to bet, the animated series one is going to be agonizingly terrible. Yeah. So
that'd be fun too.
That'll be fun. And then, we'll focus on the Trouble with Tribbles, but we'll be able to bring in context of all the others. This great triple expanded universe that it has spawned.
Exactly.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's do it.
Yeah, brilliant. You've been listening to Untitled Star Trek Project with Joe Ford and Nathan Bottomley. We're online at UntitledStarTrekProject.com, where you can find links to our Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube channel. Our podcast artwork is by Kayla Cicerin, and the theme was composed by Cameron Lamb. This episode was recorded on the 23rd of November 2022 and released on the 2nd of December. We'll see you next time for Star Trek The Original Series, The Trouble with Tribbles.
Let's head somewhere else now, shall we?
But yes, let's. I'll edit that into something.
Well, yeah. So it looks like we're actually having a conversation with back and forth actions. Okay.
We don't normally do that. Out the...
yeah. No, we don't. That's to be. Yeah. Okay. Do you know what? I listened to the entirety of our Endgame episode yesterday. Oh, it's fabulous.
Is it?
So much to mock. I'm way crosser than you are. I'll start off by saying this will not do. You know?
This will not stand. And then, this you far, follow that up no with, further.
Well, I think this is the best we could have hoped for. And I go, that's not an argument, is it? Okay, hang on. Clear all. Oh, dear.
What time? It's okay. 9. What time do you start?
I don't actually start till 12. So I think what I might do is have a... I didn't have a bath earlier, so I might have a quick bath. Have an hour, half an hour's nap, and then get ready and go.
See, I'm only at 67%, so I have to walk for about 40 minutes. But I'm listening to a podcast. It's nice and cool, but not too cool. It's sort of dark. It'll be quite nice. Then I'll water the plants.
Oh, that rain sheeting on the window. Okay. Well, I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
All right. It's that time of the episode.